Chapter 77. Is in part professional, and furnishes the reader with some valuable hints in relation to the management of a sick chamber, Mr. Mould was surrounded by his household gods. He was enjoying the sweets of domestic repose, and gazing on them with a calm delight. The day being sultry, and the window open, the legs of Mr. Mould were on the window seat, and his back reclined against the shutter. Over his shining head a handkerchief was drawn, to guard his baldness from the flies. The room was fragrant with the smell of punch, a tumbler of which grateful compound stood upon a small round table, convenient to the hand of Mr. Mould, so deftly mixed that as his eye looked down into the cool transparent drink, another eye, peering brightly from behind the crisp lemon peel, looked up at him, and twinkled like a star. Deep in the city, and within the ward of Cheap, stood Mr. Mould's establishment. His harem, or, in other words, the common sitting room of Mrs. Mould and family, was at the back, over the little counting house behind the shop, abutting on a churchyard small and shady. In this domestic chamber Mr. Mould now sat, gazing, a placid man, upon his punch and home. If, for a moment at a time, he sought a wider prospect, whence he might return with freshened zest to these enjoyments, his moist glance wandered like a sunbeam through a rural screen of scarlet runners, trained on strings before the window, and he looked down, with an artist's eye, upon the graves. The partner of his life, and daughters twain, were Mr. Mould's companions. Plump as any partridge was each Miss Mould, and Mrs. M. was plumper than the two together. So round and chubby were their fair proportions, that they might have been the bodies once belonging to the angels' faces in the shop below, grown up, with other heads attached to make them mortal. Even their peachy cheeks were puffed out and distended, as though they ought of right to be performing on celestial trumpets. The bodiless cherubs in the shop, who were depicted as constantly blowing those instruments forever and ever without any lungs, played, it is to be presumed, entirely by ear. Mr. Mould looked lovingly at Mrs. Mould, who sat hard by, and was a helpmate to him in his punch as in all other things. Each seraph daughter, too, enjoyed her share of his regards, and smiled upon him in return. So bountiful were Mr. Mould's possessions, and so large his stock in trade, that even there, within his household sanctuary, stood a cumbrous press, whose mahogany maw was filled with shrouds, and winding sheets, and other furniture of funerals. But, though the Mrs. Mould had been brought up, as one may say, beneath his eye, it had cast no shadow on their timid infancy or blooming youth. Sporting behind the scenes of death and burial from cradlehood, the Mrs. Mould knew better. Hatbands, to them, were but so many yards of silk or crepe, the final robe, but such a quantity of linen. The Mrs. Mould could idealize a player's habit, or a court lady's petticoat, or even an act of parliament. But they were not to be taken in by palls. They made them sometimes. The premises of Mr. Mould were hard of hearing to the boisterous noises in the great main streets, and nestled in a quiet corner, where the city strife became a drowsy hum, that sometimes rose and sometimes fell, and sometimes altogether ceased, suggesting to a thoughtful mind a stoppage in Cheapside. The light came sparkling in among the scarlet runners, as if the churchyard winked at Mr. Mould, and said, "We understand each other." Apostrophe, and from the distant shop a pleasant sound arose of coffin-making with a low melodious hammer, rat, tat, 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 alike promoting slumber and digestion. Quite the buzz of insects, apostrophe, said Mr. Mould, closing his eyes in a perfect luxury. It puts one in mind of the sound of animated nature in the agricultural districts. It's exactly like the woodpecker tapping. Apostrophe, the woodpecker tapping the hollow elm tree, apostrophe, observed Mrs. Mould, adapting the words of the popular melody to the description of wood commonly used in the trade. Ha, ha, apostrophe, apostrophe, laughed Mr. Mould. Not at all bad, my dear. We shall be glad to hear from you again, Mrs. M. Hollow Elm Tree, eh? Ha, ha, very good indeed. I've seen worse than that in the Sunday papers, my love. Apostrophe, Mrs. Mould, thus encouraged, took a little more of the punch, and handed it to her daughters, who dutifully followed the example of their mother. Hollow elm tree, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Mould, making a slight motion with his legs, in his enjoyment of the joke. It's speech in the song. Elm, eh? Yes, to be sure. Ha, ha, ha. Upon my soul, that's one of the best things I know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he was so excessively tickled by the jest, that he couldn't forget it, but repeated 20 times, elm, eh? Yes, to be sure. Elm, of course. Ha, ha, ha. Upon my life, you know, that ought to be sent to somebody who could make use of it. It's one of the smartest things that ever was said. Hollow elm tree, eh? Of course. Very hollow. Ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe, here a knock was heard at the room door. That's Tacker, I know, apostrophe, said Mrs. Mould, by the wheezing he makes. Who that hears him now would suppose he'd ever had wind enough to carry the feathers on his head. Come in, Tacker. Apostrophe, beg your pardon, ma'am, apostrophe, said Tacker, looking in a little way. I thought our governor was here. Apostrophe, well, so he is, apostrophe, cried Mould. Oh, I didn't see you, I'm sure, apostrophe, said Tacker, looking in a little farther. You wouldn't be inclined to take a walk in one of two, with a plain wood and a tin plate, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly not, apostrophe, replied Mr. Mould, much too common. Nothing to say to it. Apostrophe, I told him it was precious low, apostrophe, observed Mr. Tacker. Tell him to go somewhere else. We don't do that style of business here, apostrophe, said Mr. Mould. Like their impudence to propose it. Who is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, apostrophe, returned Tacker, pausing, that's where it is, you see. It's the Beatles' son-in-law. Apostrophe, the Beatles' son-in-law, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mould. Well, I'll do it, if the beetle follows in his cocked hat, not else. We carry it off that way, by looking official, but it'll be low enough, then. His cocked hat, mind. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I'll take care, sir, apostrophe, rejoined Tacker. Oh, Mrs. Gamp's below, and wants to speak to you. Apostrophe, tell Mrs. Gamp to come upstairs, apostrophe, said Mould. Now Mrs. Gamp, what's your news? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the lady in question was by this time in the doorway, curtsying to Mrs. Mould. At the same moment a peculiar fragrance was borne upon the breeze, as if a passing fairy had echoed, and had previously been to a wine vault. Mrs. Gamp made no response to Mr. Mould, but curtsied to Mrs. Mould again, and held up her hands and eyes, as in a devout thanksgiving, that she looked so well. She was neatly, but not gaudily attired, in the weeds she had worn, when Mr. Pecksniff had the pleasure of making her acquaintance, and was perhaps the turning of a scale more snuffy. There are some happy creatures, apostrophe Mrs. Gamp observed, as time runs backwards with, and you are one, Mrs. Mould, not that he need do nothing except use you in his most audacious way for years to come, I'm sure, for young you are and will be. I says to Mrs. Harris, apostrophe Mrs. Gamp continued, only t'other day, the last Monday evening fortnight has ever dawned upon this Pilgian's progress of a mortal whale. I says to Mrs. Harris, when she says to me, years and our trials, Mrs. Gamp, sets marks upon us all. Say not the words, Mrs. Harris, if you and me is to be continual friends, for such is not the case. Mrs. Mould, I says, making so free, I will confess, as use the name, apostrophe, she curtsied here, is one of them that goes a genny observation straight. And never, Mrs. Harris, whilst I've a drop of breath to draw, will I set by, and not stand up, don't think it. I ask your pardon, ma'am, says Mrs. Harris, and I humbly grant your grace, For if ever a woman lived as would see her fellow creatures in two fits to serve her friends, well do I know that woman's name is Sary Gamp. Apostrophe, at this point she was fain to stop for breath, and advantage may be taken of the circumstance, to state that a fearful mystery surrounded this lady of the name of Harris, whom no one in the circle of Mrs. Gamp's acquaintance had ever seen. Neither did any human being know her place of residence, though Mrs. Gamp appeared on her own showing to be in constant communication with her. There were conflicting rumors on the subject, but the prevalent opinion was that she was a phantom of Mrs. Gamp's brain as Mrs. Doe and Roe are fictions of the law created for the express purpose of holding visionary dialogues with her on all manner of subjects, and invariably winding up with a compliment to the excellence of her nature. And likewise, what a pleasure, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, turning with a tearful smile towards the daughters, to see them two young ladies as I know it afore a tooth in their pretty heads was cut, and have many a day seen the sweet creatures, playing at variance down in the shop, and fuller in the order book to its long home in the iron safe. But that's all past and over, Mr. Mould, apostrophe, as she thus got in a carefully regulated routine to that gentleman, she shook her head waggishly. That's all past and over now, sir, and it, apostrophe, apostrophe, changes, Mrs. Gamp, changes, apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the undertaker. More changes to come, afore we've done with changes, sir, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, nodding yet more waggishly than before. Young ladies with such faces, thinks of something else besides variance, don't they, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am sure I don't know, Mrs. Gamp, apostrophe, said Mould, with a chuckle not bad in Mrs. Gamp, my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh yes, you do know, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, and so does Mrs. Mould, your handsome partner too, sir, and so do I, although the blessing of a daughter was denied me, which, if we had had one, Gamp would certainly have drunk its little shoes right off its feet, as with our precious boy he did, and arterward send the child a errand, to sell his wooden leg for any money it would fetch as matches in the rough, and bring it home in liquor, which was truly done beyond his years, for every individual penny that child lost at toss, or buy for kidney ones, and come home arterwards quite bold, to break the news, and offering to drown himself, if such would be a satisfaction to his parents. Oh yes, you do know, sir, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, wiping her eye with her shawl, and resuming the thread of her discourse. There's something besides births and burials in the newspapers, and there, Mr. Mould, apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Mould winked at Mrs. Mould, whom he had by this time taken on his knee, and said, no doubt, a good deal more, Mrs. Gamp. Upon my life, Mrs. Gamp is very far from bad, my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, there's marryings, and there, sir, apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, while both the daughters blushed and tittered. Bless their precious hearts, and well they knows it. Well you know it too, and well did Mrs. Mould, when you was at their time of life. But my opinion is, you're all of one age now. For as to you and Mrs. Mould, sir, ever having grandchildren, apostrophe, oh, fie, fie. Nonsense, Mrs. Gamp, apostrophe, replied the undertaker. Devilish smart, though. Copy tal. Apostrophe, this was in a whisper. My dear, loud again, Mrs. Gamp can drink a glass of rum, I dare say. Sit down, Mrs. Gamp, sit down. Apostrophe, Mrs. Gamp took the chair that was nearest the door, and casting up her eyes towards the ceiling, feigned to be wholly insensible to the fact of a glass of rum being in preparation, until it was placed in her hand by one of the young ladies, when she exhibited the greatest surprise. A thing, apostrophe, she said, as hardly ever, Mrs. Mould, occurs with me, unless it is when I am indispatched, and find my half a pint of porter settling heavy on the chest. Mrs. Harris often and often says to me, Sary Gamp, she says, you really do amaze me. Mrs. Harris, I says to her, why so? Give it a name, I beg. Telling the truth then, ma'am, says Mrs. Harris, and shaming him as shall be nameless betwixt you and me, never did I think till I knowed you, as any woman could sick nurse and monthly likeways, on the little, that you takes to drink. Mrs. Harris, I says to her, none on us knows what we can do till we tries, and once, when me and Gam kept house, I thought so too. But now, I says, my half a pint of porter fully satisfies. Purwisen, Mrs. Harris, that it is brought reglar, and drawed mild. Whether I six or monthlies, ma'am, I hope I does my duty, but I am but a poor woman, and I earns my living hard. Therefore I do require it, which I makes confession, to be brought reglar and drawed mild. Apostrophe, the precise connection between these observations and the glass of rum, did not appear. For Mrs. Gamp proposing as a toast the best of lucks to all. ... took off the dram in quite a scientific manner, without any further remarks. And what's your news, Mrs. Gamp? ... asked Mold again, as that lady wiped her lips upon her shawl, and nibbled a corner off a soft biscuit, which she appeared to carry in her pocket as a provision against contingent drams. How's Mr. Chuffy? ... Mr. Chuffy, sir, ... she replied, is just as usual, he ain't no better, and he ain't no worse. I take it very kind in the gentleman, to have rode up to you and said, let Mrs. Gamp take care of him till I come home, but everything he does is kind. There ain't a many like him. If there was, we shouldn't want no churches. ... What do you want to speak to me about, Mrs. Gamp? ... said Mold, coming to the point. Just this, sir, Mrs. Gamp returned, with thanks to you for asking. There is a gent, sir, at the Bull in Holborn, as has been took ill there, and is bad abed. They have a day nurse as was recommended from Bartholomew's. And well I knows her, Mr. Mold, her name being Mrs. Prigg, the best of creeters. But she is otherways engaged at night, and they are in wants of night watching. Consequent, she says to them, having reposed the greatest friendliness in me for 20 years, the soberest person going, and the best of blessings in the sick room, is Mrs. Gamp. Send a boy to Kingsgate Street, she says, and snap her up at any price, for Mrs. Gamp is worth her weight and more in Goldian guineas. My landlord brings the message down to me, and says, being in a light place where you are, and this job promising so well, why not unite the two? No, sir, I says, not unbeckoning to Mr. Mold, and therefore do not think it. But I will go to Mr. Mold, I says, and ask him, if you like. ... Here she looked sideways at the undertaker, and came to a stop. Night watching, eh? ... said Mold, rubbing his chin. From 8 o'clock till 8, sir. I will not deceive you, ... Mrs. Gamp rejoined. And then go back, eh? ... said Wood. Quite free, then, sir, to attend to Mr. Chuffy. His ways being quiet, and his hours early, he'd be abed, sir, nearly all the time. I will not deny, ... said Mrs. Gamp with meekness, that I am but a poor woman, and that the money is a object. But do not let that act upon you, Mr. Mold. Rich folks may ride on camels, but it ain't so easy for 'em to see out of a needle's eye. That is my comfort, and I hope I knows it. ... Well, Mrs. Gamp, observed Mold, I don't see any particular objection to your earning an honest penny under such circumstances. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.